Hi, everybody. My name is Christy, a grateful member. So I'm going to split my time, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'll just talk about how I got here. You know, my family started with my grandparents. On my mother's side, she had two alcoholic parents. Her father took off when she was two, went to work one day and never came back. And he reconnected with her when she was 35. He'd been living as an alcoholic on the streets of San Francisco. Her mother married five times. She was incredibly beautiful, really messed up. She died in a mental institution in her 50s. So my mother came from a really tough life. She had sexually abused, physically abused. Her brother died of a heroin overdose when he was 35. Her mother used to dress her up in boys' clothes. My mom was incredibly beautiful. She ended up being a model and had her own business. She was incredibly intelligent, you know, just against all odds, she came through it physically, but mentally she was really messed up. She married my dad. My dad came from a very poor family, a lot of kids. His dad was crazy, rageaholic. His mom was an angel. Thank God that from I had a grandmother that was a real angel. So my parents married when they were like 20 and 27, and I was born right away. My brother was born 2 years later, and then they divorced as soon as my brother was born. My mother knew when she got pregnant with my brother that they weren't going to stay together. My mom ended up getting married a couple more times. I found out later that she was married before my dad, so she was married four times. We moved a lot. We had a stepfather who didn't like us. She married him twice, divorced him twice. It was just a really chaotic life. She had a full-time job, her own career, her own business. She would work until 9 o'clock at night, normally get home at 10. We never saw her. You know, we had a revolving door of housekeepers and babysitters that took care of us. And then on the weekends, we'd see my father every other weekend. He got remarried, had a daughter, had married a woman much younger than he was. My half-sister's 13 years younger than I am. And my mom started, I guess it was maybe in junior high school where I noticed there was something going on with my mom. She always had a lot of physical problems, and the story went that she was on a roller coaster ride and hurt her neck in her early 20s, around the time I was born. And she had such physical pain from that, this terrible headache that could never be diagnosed, that she started taking pain medications. And it escalated throughout my life to the point where when I was in high school, she was shooting Demerol, you know, and it was Vicodin and codeine and Percodan, and I mean, it was everything. And she would just go from doctor to doctor. If one doctor cut her off, she'd go find another doctor that would just give her these prescriptions. And I was kind of in the middle of it. A lot of times her prescriptions would run out before her prescription was due, and I'd be down, you know, crying in front of the pharmacist, begging him to please give her her Demerol prescription because she was going through withdrawals. She also became suicidal when I was in junior high school. She started talking about killing herself a lot. She had tried to kill herself before she married my dad with a friend of hers. They opened an oven and, you know, turned on the gas and hoped to die, and it didn't happen. So she started talking about killing herself a lot. She literally would lock herself in a bathroom and say, "I'm taking all my pills right now," and I'd be there on the other side of the bathroom door crying, pleading with her not to do that. And I was thinking about this today, why didn't I call the police? I didn't even cross my mind to call the police, because it was the shame of what we were going through. You know, we lived in a nice, affluent area. Nobody knew what was going on inside my house. You know, we had a nice house, fancy car. My mom was beautiful. All my friends thought I was the envy of all my friends. And I just played along like everything was honky-dory, you know. And nobody knew what was going on. My brother and I never talked about it. He would close himself in his bedroom and just crank the rock and roll music as loud as he could and just try to drown it out. You know, the garage door would open when she would come home, and if he was not in his room, he would jump up and go to his room and close the door. And he and I always were at odds with each other. So it was a really dysfunctional life. I was thinking about this today, that thank God I had animals. You know, that I really think is what helped me get through my childhood. Because we moved so often, I didn't have lifelong friends. I always felt my own self-esteem. I had no self-esteem. So I was probably kind of a loner. I remember playing, like being on the rings in school when I was a kid, or playing jacks by myself or skipping rope or whatever. But I don't remember having a lot of friends. And I think I was really shy. I look back at pictures of myself now. I was so skinny. I'm sure I was anorexic without even knowing. I always bit my nails. I still have issues with that. And I read now, like, you know, it's kind of like cutting, like kids cut themselves now. To do that is like just inflicting pain on yourself. I had so much pain inside, I didn't know, I had no outlet. So I got through high school. I went to college. But I mentioned my father for a minute. My dad was a total rageaholic, like his father. My parents were both beautiful to look at. They were like movie star beautiful. Beautiful couple. My mother left my dad because he was being physically abusive with her and with us. And I think he was always so angry with her that he took it out on us. And he always said we were spoiled and we were brat. I mean, we couldn't do anything right. And we really didn't want to go see him every other weekend. And my mom kind of overspoiled us because she didn't have it growing up, and he resented the fact that she was doing that. So to the point where when I went to a nice college, an expensive college, she paid for everything. He didn't pay a penny of my college. When she would ask him, can you give me extra child support? She got very little child support, no alimony, for braces or for whatever the extra, you know, cost was. He would say no. So we were kind of in the middle of that, of him bad-mouthing her and her bad-mouthing him, and it was like a ping-pong ball going back and forth. And it was really confusing as a kid, and I think we both were angry at both parents for doing that and for putting that as in the middle. Like, you know, they're trying to, like, they were trying to get us to take sides, basically. And my mother totally favored my brother, and my dad totally favored me. I mean, and they would both admit it, and there were reasons for that, you know, but that was another additional thing for me. I lived with my mother, and I just felt, like, so unworthy. And that idea of not being pretty enough, smart enough, anything enough. I was also very dyslexic. I was thinking about this today. And I remember, like, I would sit in the last row at school and just duck and pray to God that the teacher wouldn't call on me. You know, I was one of those kids who was just daydreaming and looking out the window and not listening at all to what was going on in school. I got through school, I don't know how, I didn't excel, but I passed, I got through school. And then if I have to go to the board and do some kind of mathematical solution to something, oh my God, I would almost pass out. If I had a public speak, I would almost pass out. I would get so, so nervous. It was like, it was paralyzing and crippling. And it has taken me a lot in my adult life to overcome those fears and to realize I didn't want to continue to live my life that way. And that's what I'm learning in these programs. I met my ex-husband when I was in college. He was living in Texas. I was in California. He was a few years older than I was. Like the most normal guy, normal family. I thank God that I met him because I think he really helped carry me to a place. I think I was kind of borderline. I could have gone a couple of different ways. I was a total partier in college. I think every guy I dated ended up being an alcoholic later in life. They probably were then, but we didn't really know about that then. We weren't aware of it. And my husband was just his, you know, military family, staunch Republican, very opposite of where I came from. But I think it was like a godsend looking back. It really, really was. I kind of cleaned up my act. He was very responsible and very ethical and had high morals. And if I was ever not sure, you know, I learned from him. So he kind of parented me in a way, you know, that I didn't have. We were married for a long time. And I think about that a lot now too, you know, how this disease has affected every part of my life. You know, my self-esteem, my relationship with money, my relationship with people, places, and things, love, sex, everything. I still love him. We're still very, very good friends. I'm glad we're not together anymore because I think it was good while we were together for that length of time, and then we just kind of didn't have much in common anymore. And, you know, I've really blossomed since we've split up. It's been about 8 years since we've split up, and I have a whole different life than I used to have. And I wouldn't have that now if I were still with him. But I'm very thankful that after a few years of being apart and not having any contact, that we were able to come back and be best friends and say that we'll always be best friends and nobody will ever know us like we know each other because we've been together for so long. And that's a gift of this program, too, you know, that I could forgive and not hold on to the stuff and you know, and see my part in it. That's a huge thing, you know, and I have to remind myself of that all the time. Whenever I want to do this, I have to look back and say, no, what is my part in this? Okay, so that is kind of what it was like. So how did I get into program? I so wish I'd found it earlier than I did. It was been about 6 years ago. I have a man who's now my Al-Anon sponsor, but has been one of my best friends for a very long time. Gay black man who lives in San Francisco. He used to work with me, and he knew my mother very well. They were very good friends, so he knew her background. He's had his own issues with addiction. And he kept asking me to go to Al-Anon, and I kept saying, no, I'm fine. And so finally one year he said, for my birthday, my 50th birthday, will you go to a meeting with me? I'm coming to LA. Will you go to a meeting with me for my birthday present? And I'm like, how do you say no to that? So I did. And I went to a meeting in Hollywood, and it was this huge meeting in a theater, and there were, I don't know, 100 people there at least, young. And I knew right away that it was a great place. Everybody was happy, and you know, it was like so lively, and it wasn't at all what I expected. So I continued to go to that one meeting every week for a year, and then eventually I started going to other meetings. And I thought I really loved that meeting until I went to other meetings, and I realized I don't really like that meeting. It was so funny. So that idea of trying 6 different meetings when you come in, I really understand that now. And then at some point, I got a sponsor right away. I started working the steps right away. I did a 30 and 30 after probably a year of being in the program, and that really changed my recovery too, because I started seeing how by me upping my program, the recovery was really more accelerated as well. So after I did the 30-30, I would go to 5 meetings a week, 5 or 6 meetings a week. And I continue to go to a lot of meetings, 3 or 4 a week. I go to, I'm in 4 programs. And I think as time goes on, and I have 2 more programs that I know I want to go into. And I'm trying to do this. And it's funny because I thought I didn't qualify for anything when I came. Because even my mother wasn't really an alcoholic. But her, yeah, you know, I had to think, like, who do I know? My siblings are both alcohol. I mean, when I really think about it, there's so much alcoholism. But, you know, you come in, you don't think you qualify. Because my mom was a drug addict, not an alcoholic. But shoot, you know, as it was explained to me how qualification works, it's like, yeah, I definitely belong here. And then as time went on, I thought, you know, I do have a funny relationship with money. You know, I have always been able to make money, but where it goes, it's like grains of sand through my fingers, right? It's like, I was always so vague, and that's part of my disease too, is just so fuzzy, vague, cloudy. Mm-hmm. So I now work a program around money, a couple programs, where I keep track of every penny I spend. I know exactly what I earn. I've lowered my overhead. I was so freaked out when I went through my divorce because I was always self-sufficient. I had my own business, so did my husband, and we were always like his bills were his bills and mine were mine. But I had this lifestyle of 2 people overhead, and then there now I'm just 1 person, and I was just so freaked out by that. It was also when the economy was turning. And my business was dependent on that. So I learned to cut my overhead in half. I'm still not sure quite how that happened because my life doesn't seem that different. It's just becoming aware of where I spend my money. And also really, I'm going to talk about visioning too. That's become such an important part of my life. You know, working the steps. I work the steps in Al-Anon and in one money program and now in another. I'll do ACA, I think, next. And I'll probably do SLA at some point because I know that I'm fearful of, I don't trust myself to be in a relationship with a man that I think will be good for me, right? So for me, I've just taken a big time out until I realize that I'm healthy enough to know that I'm going to attract a man that's healthy enough to be with, you know, and really trying to define what that looks like. So visualization, you know, I never used to think about the future. I was married, I had a job, I had a house, I had a dog. It was Groundhog Day. And that was great because I don't like change. After having all that change as a kid, I wanted my life to just stay the same, and I would feel very protected by that, right? Then when my marriage fell apart, kind of like my perceived safety net left, and it freaked me out and scared the hell out of me. I didn't think I'd ever be in that position. So that's when I came to Al-Anon. I really started loving myself and realizing that with God, I'm fine. I've always been fine, you know. I just need to pick myself up, dust myself off, and continue to show up every day. You know, and if that doesn't mean that if I'm having a crappy day and I'm tired, I can go home and take a nap and not feel guilty about it. I've learned that about self-care, you know, halt, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. That was huge for me because I used to be a total workaholic and I would work 12 hours a day even if I was exhausted. Go home and not eat dinner and go, you know what I mean? It was just crazy the way I used to take care of myself or not take care of myself. So I'm learning how to think big in here. You know, I just did a visions retreat last week. I go to it every year. We do a big visions board. All year long, I'm looking through magazines or newspapers, anything that inspires me. And I just, this is my perfectionism thing. I have little envelopes of just like, you know, trips I want to take and men I think are good looking. And, you know, what I want my work life to look like, my home life, my pets. And it's so inspirational to see at the end of the retreat, there's 60 of us. We each got up one by one and shared our boards and to see what everybody else's visions are. It's just, that was my favorite part of the weekend. And I've done this 5 years in a row, so now I have five boards and I see that I'm thinking bigger and bigger. You know, it was like, why don't I deserve this thing? You know what I mean? I think as growing up in this disease, we don't feel worthy enough to have good things. We feel like, I felt like I had to punish myself because I was a bad kid somehow, right? And that idea of reparenting, I have to, it's like I'm just trying to take a big eraser into my memory banks and erase all the negative messages I've given myself or that I've been given in my lifetime and just start from scratch. And with God, I'm just rewriting that script. I'm just rewriting the message. You know, I've always been a good person. I've always been lovable. I have a lot of love to give. I'm a very generous person. I'm smart. You know, I'm pretty. I'm all the things that I used to not think I was. So what does that look like for me? Today, I'm so proud of myself. I'm trying to learn to love numbers, okay? Coming from, like, honest to God, like, shaking around numbers to learning numbers. So I'm trying to figure out a better way to budget my money, and you know, I do keep track every day, but now I have this thing coming up where I have to share some numbers with some people and I want it to look really good and professional. So today I was in my office all day just plugging in numbers and I'm thinking, this is so good. Well, literally it used to just make me like shake and I just want to throw up. I would get so anxious around it. It was that old trigger reaction. And now it's like, I'm loving this. This is really cool, you know? So is that slow boat? I love that thought of, you know, recovery is like you're out in the middle of the ocean in a boat and you're going one way and you're just like, no, I want to go toward the light. I'm not going to go toward the dark, deep, sinky area anymore. I'm going to turn around and go toward the light. It takes a long time to turn it around, but that's part of the beauty too, you know? I have such gratitude. If it was too easy, I wouldn't be grateful for it, you know? I love the fact that I have to work for it. And it's these slow recognitions and acknowledgments, the little light bulbs that go off in my head that I'm so grateful for. And to me, that's God, you know. I was going to bring my visions board today to show you. And I thought, you know, I have this small car, my big German Shepherd is in the back seat. And I thought, she's going to thrash it if I do it. As much as I'd like to have shown it to you, the old me would have bought it anyway and then been upset when she thrashed it, like when I knew that she would, right? I would just override the God talking to me. And now it's like, okay, that's God talking to me. I'm not going to take my vision boards because I don't want her to thrash it. You know, you just have to imagine that one side is Africa. I really, really want to go to Africa. And the other side are women that I think are beautiful and that I admire, that I want to aspire to be like, to attract the man, that I have a lot of these men on my board to attract that man. So relationship on one side and travel. And the older I get, it's more and more about travel. When my brother and I were kids, we made a pact that we were never going to have kids. We really did. We were like 8 and 6, I think. And we said, we are going to stop this crazy insanity bloodline with our generation. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. And we never had kids, neither did my half-sister. And we talk about that sometimes. And I think I know that I was not prepared to be a mother. I know now that my mom did the best she could. I mean, considering her mother, it was a miracle. I think about that now too, that she did as well as she could. It's amazing to me. I'm exhausted just even thinking about her schedule. How did she raise two kids and drive back and forth and have all this real estate and businesses and marriages and stepkids? And it was, I don't know how she did it. When I came in here, I hated her, okay? When I was 28, I got married. I had worked for her before that. It didn't end well. And then she said, I'm not going to your wedding. I said, fine, don't go to my wedding. So she didn't go to my wedding. 4 years later, she died. She overdosed intentionally, left a note. So I had this 20-year period between, 25 between then and coming into program of such mixed emotions inside, you know, so much guilt that we were really close growing up. We were like more like friends than mother and daughter. But that guilt just about killed me, you know, because I really did feel like I was responsible for that. And had I been there, things would have been different. I know that's not true. I still will always have a little bit of guilt that I wasn't there for those last 4 years. But at the time, I really felt like I was going to go down with this ship. And I didn't know. I had no life preserver. So I do give myself that compassion because it was really screwed up. And there's so many, I'm sure you all know, you have your own stories in so many different ways. And it was kind of like I just couldn't do it anymore. Same thing, my brother stopped talking to her too. So she was really alone when she died, which is sad. The other thing I've learned is she had all the physical things, you know, like the properties and, you know, the money and stuff. But she literally was alone when she died. And I think I kind of grew up that way too, both my parents. It was all about money and success that would give me the admiration that I so badly wanted. You know, you go out and you make money, you're successful, then you're good. Anything short of that, not so much. So that's partly part of the workaholism and people-pleasing and trying to prove myself to my dad. And I kind of got there, and then when I was married, and then when the same thing, when my divorce came, no kids, got my dogs, you know, I've got this house and all this stuff, it was so empty, you know? So I made this conscious decision to really change my life, and I moved up here from LA, and I live in a tiny little place. I rent my house out. I had to get rid of a lot of stuff to live in my tiny little place, and I honestly couldn't be happier. You know, I spent a lot of my time doing yoga, going to meetings. I still try to do the travel. I try to do a nice trip every year. That's the huge thing for me as I get older. And there are a lot of places I want to see, and you know, that's become a priority to see the world and not have the stuff. But I have to say that I don't think I've ever been happier, you know. I do meditate. I think that's been a huge tool for me. I was thinking, I came up with something yesterday in my mind of like being in the Zen zone. That's my new thing. I'm going to be in the Zen zone. You know, it used to be like this, up and down, up and down. And I thought that was so exciting, and I just love that, you know. And even as a kid, I had stomach problems, and, you know, it was, you know, that is not where I want to be anymore. That is not healthy for me. If I leave enough time now, I don't try to time things to the second like I used to. I was talking to some friends last night from program about this, you know, like leaving a lot of time. I used to think it was so exciting if I would time it to the second and get to an appointment right on time and not be late. And I was like, you know, tailgating and racing to get there. Crazy. So now I leave enough time. And one of the things I love I was thinking about this and I read this today. I pulled the red book out. I hadn't looked at it for a while. Is the idea that I have enough time, enough money, and enough love. You know, when I do the step work in any program, when I root down to the problem, is fear. It's always fear. And if I tell myself I have enough time, enough money, and enough love, then that pretty much alleviates the fear, because it's usually what the fear is around. It's usually about financial insecurity, you know. And I get why that is too, because both my parents were so poor growing up. They always thought that they were going to end up pushing a shopping cart on the street. Even though that was false evidence from the outside, it never looked like that. But they were convinced that that's what was going to happen, you know? So I think coming out of vagueness and really having a sense of what my assets are, you know, that I'm putting money aside for my retirement. I'm not in denial about that. I don't know that I'll ever get married again. I don't think I will. In my mind, I know you're supposed to say be open to it or whatever. I think I will be in a relationship again. I have no doubt about that. I've known that since my marriage fell apart, that that was the reason my marriage fell apart. But I like being on my own, and I don't get lonely. It's funny, people ask me that all the time, aren't you lonely? And I'm like, no, I never, ever feel lonely. And I think it was because I spent so much time alone as a kid. I said to my husband after we broke up, I said, you know, I always felt a little uncomfortable around you. And it's just, I feel a little uncomfortable around anybody, right? That's just the way I'm wired, because I was around on my own so much. I'm so happy on my own. So that's something else that I know I have to get accustomed to, being around people and feeling comfortable around anybody for any length of time. You know, I do have a travel friend that I travel with, and we get along really well, and we can go on 3-week trips and we're good. But it's just an awareness of something that I need to work on. Okay, let me think what other recovery things I could say. I love my sponsors. The idea of all the stuff. Service. I always have a service commitment at any time at a meeting. So I have one service, at least one. Whenever I sponsor someone, that's part of our deal. They always have a service commitment, and they work the steps. Like, why have a sponsor if you're not going to work the steps? You know, otherwise just make outreach calls, you know? And then for me, it's like I can't work the steps in more than one program at a time. So I'm doing my steps right now. When that's done, I'll go to another program and find a sponsor and work the steps in that program. I'm happy to be here. I look forward to these meetings. I don't think I've ever been in a bad 12-step meeting. I've never walked out thinking, oh, what a waste of an hour that was. You know, I always, always get something out of it. I love the intimacy that we have with each other. I feel so safe with you guys. And it's opened me up. Doing things like this is open me up to people outside these rooms too. You know, I couldn't even tell you how I used to think. Someone say, how do you feel? I'd say, well, my husband, you know, or my dad, or I couldn't even tell you what I was feeling. I've learned in here through the work, through the writing, through the steps, to be able to put words to the feelings, you know, and to learn that I can love myself, warts and all, and that nobody is perfect. I can't be perfect. Let go of that. My house used to be perfect. My car used to be perfect. I would be obsessed with, oh my God, my poor husband. I don't know how he did that for so long. Now my house isn't perfect. I love it. It's kind of messy. You know, my car's kind of messy. I don't care. You know, so what? And I'll leave it with this. And the one big thing, and I mention this a lot of times when I share at meetings, is one thing that really helped me is the idea, and I had to repeat this a lot to myself, it's none of my business what other people think of me, right? I spent my life trying to get you to like me, to approve of me, to make it look good. Even if I didn't like you, I didn't care. If I didn't like you or I didn't think you liked me, I'd try harder, right? Now I just don't. It's such a waste of energy for me. That's exhausting. You know, now I just really try to love myself, take care of myself, love God, know that if I am this good person that I think I am, that people are going to like me anyway, you know, and I like people. So I think it does kind of work both ways. Whatever you put out, I do believe comes back to you. So thank you so much. It's been a real treat to be able to speak with you today.